This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Regular gum is boring, but Icebreakers ice cubes are different. They're fancy. Icebreakers gum has flavor crystals, which deliver a rush of cool, refreshing flavor. Plus, they are delightfully cube-shaped, making them soft and satisfying to chew. Icebreakers ice cubes gum. Ooh, fancy. Pick up your favorite flavor today.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at IKEA-USA.com today.
Hey everybody, welcome, and thank you for listening to this episode of Marriage Therapy Radio. I'm Zach Brittle. I'm on my own this week, sort of. I mean, Laura got a headache, she had a migraine or something. She did not have the COVID. She thought maybe for a second she did, but she doesn't. But I'm here this week with my friend, Stephen James. Stephen is someone that you should know about. I brought him on the podcast ostensibly to tell you about his book, which is called Hope in the Age of Addiction: How to Find Freedom and Restore Your Relationships. I know that this is a time of year when addictions of all sorts sort of pop up. It's also a time of year that we're talking about hope. As it turns out, in this conversation, we don't talk about addiction at all, but we do talk quite a bit about hope, and it's not obvious. And that's one of the things I love about talking to Stephen, is that you sort of think you're talking about one thing, but sometimes you find out you're talking about another thing. He regularly blows my mind. I think he'll blow your mind too. This is a very cool conversation. Stick around.
Okay, people, we're just going to jump right into it. You just missed about 4 minutes of monologue that was mind-blowing to me. Because I'm talking to one of my favorite people on the planet. He's one of the most sort of engaging and smartest human beings I know, therapists I know, husbands and fathers. I think you're going to really enjoy hearing from Stephen about just kind of what's going on in his world. We are good friends. We've been friends for about 20 years. And part of what I'm sad is
it makes it sound so old.
Well, I mean, I think it's weird to be a person who has friendships that are 20 years old that are that began when I was an adult. That's the thing that's kind of weird. But anyway, people in Marriage Therapy Radio land, you just missed this this piece that was really, really just reminiscent for me of the way that Stephen engages the world, which is through complex lenses and through themes and patterns. A lot of his work is around parenting. Most recently, it's around addiction. He does a lot of leadership work. And we're just going to chat like friends and see what we can glean. I have some specific questions, but maybe this will go all over the place. Laura has a migraine headache, so she's not with us, which maybe is even more fun today. So, hey, Stephen, good to see you again after 5 minutes of you blowing my mind. So,
hey, Zach, I've been looking forward to this. This has been fun because we scheduled this like in April. And I appreciate
Stephen's
between your
fancy
boundaries
so
and
I
mine.
Called, Stephen is this here. Okay. So people, I'll just talk to everybody at once. So Stephen is this guy in my life. I can text him at 2 o'clock in the morning and be like, hey, I've got this question that it's burning on my soul. And I'm wondering if you can give me like 5 minutes. And he's like, yep, absolutely. And it's at like 4 a.m. And he'll give me 100% of his attention. I'm like, hey, want to come on the podcast? He's like, yep. I need to talk to my assistant. And she's like, how about 5 months from now? And I'm like, well, I don't know. I kind of thought he would say yes yesterday for tomorrow. But you're busy. What are you doing? Tell us about like who you are and what you're up to.
Yeah, I do two main things. One is I lead a company called the Leadership Lab, which is a membership organization for leaders that want to live more meaningful, purposeful, impactful lives. And so it's a coaching program for people who are successful in their life and then have built leaders and see themselves as leaders and are asking the question, now what? And recognize they're lonely in that, and that becoming a leader inherently makes you more lonely because it's a smaller pool So that's my main thing. With that, we do I work with organizations that are in complex leadership moments. So they might be merging. They might be buying a company and absorbing it. They might be going through some big transition. And I work with on the human capital side of that, of helping organizations navigate and metabolize and grow through change. So my background, as you know, is as a therapist for 20 years. And I've taken all those skills as a therapist, individual and marriage counseling, and all those ways that we look at problems and help people find meaning in those things. And I've applied that to the work environment. And we spend a third of our life asleep. We spend a third of our life typically working, and a third of our life doing other. And so I think work is a really meaningful place, especially in Western culture. So I work in that realm of making work and life more meaningful for people. That's a lot of what I do. I also own a counseling center called Sage Hill Counseling in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's essentially a group practice. We've got about 20 therapists that give or take the week, if it moves up and down. And we're just helping people be who they're made to be, so they can do what they're made to do, you know, across pretty much later adolescence up through adulthood. We don't do a lot of children work. We do, got a few therapists that work with teenagers, and most of what we do is individual and couples therapy. Do some workshops and intensives, yeah. So I lead that. I don't do much therapy anymore, direct therapy services, but I train therapists and help them think about the work that they do, I think, in better ways, more robust and durable ways. It's kind of what I talk about with them.
Right on. Yeah, your husband, you've been married about the same as me. We're coming up on 25 years. Yep.
Our anniversary is next week as we record this. A week from today is my 26th wedding anniversary.
Right on. Happy anniversary. I think this will come out right before that. So we'll make sure everybody.
Happy anniversary, Heather. Anniversary. She won't listen to this, but yeah. I'll say, you know, that is the thing. And maybe we'll talk about my childhood and my family and all that stuff growing up, or I don't know, but like my marriage is the thing I am most proud about in my whole world. Like I just described my work, you know, like the thing that like I'm most amazed of and feel honored by and, privileged to have is, and the thing that probably frustrates me and scares me the most is my marriage. But I love Heather. I love being married too. And I think marriage is a really awesome thing. And so
can you
I
talk
like
about that a little bit more? And here's why I want you to talk about it, because I know this is true about you, and I'm not surprised that you said that. You know, when we have clients come into our office, and a lot of people who are listening to this, they're thinking about marriage often through the lens of pain, right? Like that's why people come into a counseling office. That's why they choose to listen to a podcast. Like I want to fix something, or I want to feel better about something. It's not because it's their, you know, passion or their energy, and they just want to like deepen their love of this institution. Right. But I know this is true about you. And again, one of the things that I'm, that happened right before we started recording was this idea of you talking. And I think people need to have this experience more often, which is, I've never thought about it that way before. I've never really thought about trauma or family or work like that. And I think I'd like to hear you talk about your marriage or marriage in general in a way that I'm sure people will be like, I don't know. So the bar's pretty high. I hope you can clear it.
Wow. Yeah. It's like, which as you're talking, I'm trying to like frame what I even would say.
Well, like with let's no, just talk with about no why you love marriage. Like why are you proud of this?
Why I'm proud of it. Here goes my story. I grew up in a family where my parents divorced when I was 17. Right before, like the week before my senior year of high school, the day after I got a bronze medal in the Junior Olympics, like my parents break this news that they're getting a divorce. They had been falling apart as a couple. Like my own recollection was probably like my eighth grade trip to DC, like where I grew up. One of the rites of passage was like you take an eighth grade bus trip to DC, you know? And I remember sitting around with some friends talking at some roadside cafe about our families, you know, the way dramatic middle schoolers do, you know, sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I remember commenting on my parents' marriage, and it kind of startling to me to say it, that they're probably going to end up divorced. So they, before they even got divorced, like 6, 7, 8 years, they were not doing marriage really well. There's a lot of tension, in our family, a lot of, loneliness, a lot of, for me as a kid, it was like a super lonely place. For them as a couple, there's a lot of tension. It just was not a restful place to be, was at home. So I spent a lot of time being gone, from home. So that's part of the background, right? This family that didn't really work well as a family, and a lot of independence. I met Heather in college, and she still is very beautiful, and she was very beautiful then. And so as a college student, that's kind of
you. That's for sure.
Yeah, she's what I so overkicked my coverage. She's smart, she's beautiful, she's funny, she's strong. And really the thing that attracted me the most to her was that we were out one night and I was pontificating about something, and she said, "That's bullshit." Like, she called me on it, and I was like, "Who is this woman?" And so it was her standing up to me was actually the thing that I found the most attractive to her. It was very engaging. We fell in love, and you know, you and I are different than the generation that's like the generations after us. For us, getting married was a rite of passage. It was part mm-hmm. of becoming an adult, right? Yeah. Something has shifted in our culture in the last, you know, 15 years or so, that the idea is that you grow up, you get your life together, and then you get married. You know, for us, getting married was part of becoming a grown up. It was what we did. I think there's actually some evidence that it does help you mature, that not getting married actually delays your maturity. There's this thing called second adolescence now, where there's some actually brain science around not getting married and having children keeps your brain from entering into a level of maturity. So now we've created this thing for people in their 30s called second adolescence or delayed adolescence. It's a whole new psychological phenomenon of people not maturing. Anyway, sorry, people. Yeah. If you're listening to this, you're probably married or want to be or have been. So I'm not insulting you too much. I got married out of love of my wife and desire to want to be with her, out of a sociological drive to like mature and become responsible grown up and move through my own maturation. I very quickly learned that I was play acting as a grown up. Like when I got married, and I was 22. The day after I graduated college was my wedding. You know, I graduated December 15th, December 16th. I got married. Heather had been out of school, but I very quickly, like 22, 23, 24, 25, my early part of my marriage was me play acting and pretending to be somebody I wasn't, pretending to be a man. Through a long series of events, I end up out in Seattle where we met, and part of a graduate school program and becoming a counselor. And I was in counseling personally outside of the graduate school.
And I realized I
had this great trainer that was just, I'd met with every week, and he just changed my life. And, which was you, right? He was a great guy. Yeah. A great guy. He yawned a lot though, which is strange. I know.
I still do that.
Am I boring this guy? No, but I realized I was telling you and I was telling my counselor, like outside of the school, things about me that Heather didn't know. Mm. And I realized how much of a fraud I was inside my own family. And I really couldn't have, we had a daughter by that point. And I remember like just feeling this sense of, I was getting Emma Claire out of the bath. That's our daughter. And she's 20, almost 22 now, getting her out of the bath at that time. And I remember looking at her and I remember like, oh gosh, this little baby, like, don't look at me because like you're going to really see who I am. And I don't want you to see who I am, which is like a kind of a deep psychological thought. And so I kind of came to this crossroads of like, if I'm going to be married, I want to be married to a person who knows who I am. And I'm willing to not be married as opposed to be in a fraudulent relationship where I'm acting and pretending. So I remember talking to you, we're talking to my therapist, And I went home and said to Heather one day after class or something, I said, there's things about me I need you to know. And if you don't know them, we just can't be close. And some of it was about, you know, I was sexually abused growing up. So I told her that. I told her about me feeling like a fraud. I told her, you know, but my big motivation in life was trying to make her happy and not really being with her. Talked about that. And so I talked for, like, I was just dumping secret upon secret out mm-hmm. for probably 15, 20 minutes. And I was crying and she was crying. And then it got real quiet. And I said, "What are you thinking?" And she said, "I thought it was all my fault." Mm. And it was like, it was like the first time we'd ever been like really that close, you know? And I was like, it was probably the most unalone I'd ever felt up until that point in my life was like that day, in Bothell, Washington, you know, like that started the end of our first marriage and the beginning of our second marriage. Like that was the beginning of this, you know, and we've been married now. I think we're working out our fifth marriage right now. Like we're kind of moving into our fifth marriage to each other. So one of the reasons I love being married to Heather is I love this idea that it's a place I can be myself. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a place that I can work on maturing. It's a place that has taught me about my strengths and about my gifts. It's also taught me about my limitations. It's also taught me that I'm very achievement oriented and goal oriented, and Heather's very presence oriented. So she's always inviting me, just by the nature of who she is, into just like being still and just spending time. And so we certainly have this yin and yang kind of relationship where together we make a whole person. And I think that's true for almost every couple I've worked mm-hmm. with and met, is that we find this person that fits us in a way, or to quote, what's the movie with Tom Cruise? Like, "You complete me," yeah. You know,
Jerry Maguire.
But it's also like you like confound me and you bother me. So on our best days, like we make a whole person. On our worst days, we're competing and at war for like whose style is going to be in control of our family. She mostly wins those because she's better at that than I am, better at winning than I am.
That's how puzzles work, right?
But
they're supposed to confound you on the way to figuring out, like, oh yeah, now it all fits together.
Yeah. So it's been this evolution for 26 years now of how do we fit? How do we work? Who are we becoming? She said something really wise when we were dating. She doesn't remember saying it, but it like stuck with me. And we were engaged and she said, "We're going to change a lot. And our ability to keep growing out loud with each other is going to determine whether or not we will be married and be happy." Mm-hmm. And I was like, that has stuck with me. Like, instead of trying to keep her the same or me stay the same, it's like, oh, like we're evolving. And how do we do this? And I think it goes back to something you've said a lot, and I believe, is that we choose to be married. Like, it's like something I have to get up every day and choose to be married and believe that I'm actually a better person.
Regular gum is boring, but Icebreakers ice cubes are different. They're fancy. Icebreakers gum has flavor crystals, which deliver a rush of cool, refreshing flavor. Plus, they are delightfully cube-shaped, making them soft and satisfying to chew. Icebreakers ice cubes gum. Ooh, fancy. Pick up your favorite flavor today.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between, offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Been a more virtuous person by being part of this thing than I am being off on my own, right? On my own, like, my world becomes really small, becomes narrow, becomes self-focused. Like, the worst parts of being a human the human experience kind of show up when I'm on my own. And she's, there's that. I'm a much better husband than I am father, though. I would say that. Like, okay. I'm better at being a husband than I am being a father. I struggle as a dad.
I'll have you talk about that for a second. So you have Emma Claire, then who's the twins are next?
No, Elijah's next. So Elijah's Emma Claire, next,
and he's how old?
He's 19, a freshman in college.
Right. Okay. So I remember this almost ended our friendship, which is you were pregnant with Elijah and you didn't know if you were having a boy or a girl. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we were pregnant with Abby.
Yes.
And we had decided we wanted to name her Abby. And you were like, if it's a girl, we might name her Abby. And I was like, and he was going to be born first. And I was like, if you do that, if you take the name that I have picked for my kid, we will never be friends. And I remember when Elijah was born and he was a boy. And I was like, yes, I get to, I don't know what that's about, because we had lost another name to a cousin. Abby wasn't our first choice, but it's absolutely the right choice. So I'm glad Elijah is Elijah.
Yeah, he wasn't going to be Elijah, but he was going to have another name. But the way his birth happened, we changed his name because he almost died when he was born. He was actually dead when he was born and was resuscitated and had a really complicated birth. And so we wanted to give him a name that kind of marked his birth. And so we waited a few days and researched names, and Elijah is a Jewish name that means the Lord is God, which basically means like, it ain't up to you. You're not the center of the universe. Like, there's this whole other program going on. And so that's his birth kind of represented like another ending of the fantasy that we thought life was, you know?
Yeah.
And
So talk to me a little bit about,
and then we have Henry and Teddy, who are 16-year-old twins. So we've got,
And then you're done. You're done having children.
I am surgically done having children.
I always ask couples this in my practice, because I think, you know, as you talk about even just the phases of trying to make sense of it, there is something that happens to a family when they know or they understand that they're done having children, right? Like, if we're still growing, it's really hard to plant your flag in the ground and sort of go, okay, this is who we are and this is what we're going to be doing. And of course, there's all kinds of nuance, right? Sometimes you have surprises or whatever. But when a couple comes into my office and I'm in sort of assessing, one of the things I want to know is, where are we at? Like, where are we at in sort of the phases part of the equation? Because you could do a whole bunch of work about, you know, creating stability in your marriage, and then baby number three comes along and you're like, oh, got to start over, you know?
Yeah. Well, we had two kids and we were really good parents. Like, we were crushing it with two kids. We were a little arrogant, but I think we were pretty evolved people. We were, you know, both therapists. So we had that narcissism going on and arrogance going on. Yeah. And we thought, you know, if most people shouldn't have more than two children. And we had actually a conversation like this. So sad.
Two is the right number, by the way.
Two, yeah, that's what you have. So you're better than me. And so we said, well, we're such good parents, we should probably have a third child. And so we got pregnant. And then at our 20-week sonogram, we found out we were pregnant with twins. I fainted. And then Heather went into shock, started shaking. They have been two incredible blessings in our lives, and has taught me that the only thing harder than being married is being a parent. Like, it's so hard being a parent. It's so hard. There's a sense of like being at something's deeply at stake for me, that these kids are running around the world, and mm-hmm. they have the power to ruin my life with, and they're not even thinking about me, but they have all this power to, like, you know, change the shape of my life. And they're just thinking about themselves most of the time, which they're supposed to.
Okay. So you're better at being a husband than you are at being a parent, but what is a good parent?
I don't know. I don't know.
That's not fair, because you've got like four parenting books on the market, and it's not going to help you sell any books.
Right. Well, I'm not sure the parenting books are selling. No, they are. One of them is for sure. I think this last book I wrote, Parenting with Heart.
And hold on a second here. Yeah. Like, you do know, I mean, because I'm going to plug myself. I wrote my book, The Marriage Therapy Journal. Steven has a bonus chapter in that book. So if you're interested in this interview and learning more about parenting, you should buy my book. And I'm going to tell you why. Actually, Steven's going to tell you why he's a great parent and what he has to offer you. Here you go. 3, 2, 1, go.
Your children need you as a person. They don't need you to be perfect for them. And they don't need you to chart their life in a way that's going to inoculate them from heartache and trauma and anxiety. And this movement that we've been, the psychological movement that started in the 60s, and we can thank James Dobson for leading the way and all the other people that came around him, that we can program a family in the right way that somehow is going to produce a product called a child, has created so much neuroticism and anxiety and depression and addiction. And like, it has just fueled this massive problem, which ends up creating a child-centered home or a parent-centered home, which are both not really relational. And this idea that parents have some responsibility beyond, like, they have some, they're supposed to like create some product called a child it ends up creating all kinds of problems, right?
And we've had this conversation several times, so I know what you mean by this, but maybe others don't. So I'll ask you a couple of sort of bullshit meter questions, which is, what do you mean? What do you mean a parent-centered home isn't relational, or child-centered home isn't relational? That's actually what it is. It's relational.
Okay. Thanks for asking about that. Relationship means like both people matter equally. Right. And when I've centered a system, a family system, around just the needs of the child and making sure that the child or the children get all of their needs met, right? And then I back out like what I need. If there's any margin left over, like, I'll take care of me. Then like, you end up like creating a lot of anxiety for a child, because the child intuitively like starts internalizing this idea that I've got to be okay or successful or well-rounded or whatever the values of the family are in order for mom and dad to be okay, right? Like, they start internalizing a lot of pressure and a lot of anxiety. And so the child is only left to then live at least a double life, like they have their own private internal world and then some other external reality, which is great for our business because those people show up in counseling years later. So it's, thanks parents for doing that. Right. So that's not helpful. The other model where then it's a parent centered home and the child is just adjacent to the parent's agenda, but the parent's life, you know, leaves both the parent and the child really lonely. And so then the child's seeking this relationship. It's looking for this confirmation and affirmation it's looking for from the parent. And, you know, only that we old phrases like only speak if you're spoken to, or, you know, it's because I said so, like because things I said like so. That.
Right? Ooh, it was right on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah. Like those are hallmarks of a parent centered home. When you step back from it and go, wow, like this is a human being, these are a bunch of human beings interacting. And at the foundation of humanity is this need to belong and matter, and family becomes like the biggest expression of belonging and mattering. Like, I matter to these people and I belong. And it's, you go, wow, the authority or the power I have in this child's life is only because I was born first, you know, and that we have equal, our worth is equal. It's not greater or less. Our gifts are different. Then you start leaning into this responsibility as a parent to participate in the mystery of who this child's becoming and who you're becoming alongside at the same time. Right. And so it's a much wilder ride. you know, but a much more human relational give and take learning posture than it is like, I've got all the answers. Or what, how I encounter most parents is, I've got a lot of anxiety and shame that I need this kid to fix for me. My kid turns out this way, then I'll write whatever right is for that parent, then I'll be okay. You know? Mm. And I think that's a disservice to parents. It actually, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of problems that go along with that. But, so that's what I mean, like not relational, that it's not a mutual co-creation of a relationship.
Yeah.
You know that Zach and I are huge fans of getting support, and that is why we have partnered with BetterHelp to put you in contact with licensed professional counselors in your area. Tap into the world's largest network of licensed, accredited, and experienced counselors who can help you with a range of issues, including depression, anxiety, trauma, grief, relationships, and more. With BetterHelp's counselors, you get the same professionalism and quality that you would expect from an in-office counselor. With the ability to communicate when and how you want, whether it be messaging through the phone or video conferencing. The matching process is quick but thorough. Look, I know that a lot of therapists are booked out and difficult to get into, but don't let that stop you from getting the support that you need. The cost is less than half of what Zach and I charge, which is kind of unheard of. And when you register with BetterHelp, you are supporting Marriage Therapy Radio. Go to trybetterhelp.com/MTR. So it's trybetterhelp.com/MTR to register with BetterHelp. TryBetterHelp, help, HELP.com/MTR. And you receive a special discount as a Marriage Therapy Radio listener.
How do you support or direct or parents who come into your office, and you can sort of suss that out quickly that there's something going on, but more importantly, it's different. Like she's like child centered home and he's like parent centered home. What do you have for them?
I ask a lot of questions. Like I probably used to give more answers than I do now. Mm-hmm. Now I'm in a place where I just ask a lot of questions, and I might point out, I would definitely do point out like, well, here's, sounds like this is important to you. The theme that I think about that shows up mostly in parenting or in a counseling room when people are talking about parenting is they really are trying to get some insurance policy emotionally that this child's not going to experience what they experienced, right? It's such a narrow perspective. Like, I don't want my child to experience this. And you start poking around in a story with a human being, a human parent, you start finding out they're just trying, they have all this oppositional energy against their own childhood. And they want to make sure that their child doesn't experience what they experienced, which is like, what about the rest of life? Like, I mean, it's so self-centered. It's so fear-based. It's so unprocessed. It's so when I start talking about that with parents and you start, you know, and all the pressure, one of the biggest fights we have in marriage is centers around, you know, parenting, right? Like money, yeah. In-laws, sex, and kids, right? Those are the four big fights. And so a lot of times, you know, whatever brings a couple into counseling, we're very quickly talking about differences of opinions and values when it comes to parenting. Right. And, I mean, Heather and I have really different values about ourselves. We have a lot of values that overlap. But I value, some things she doesn't value, and she values some things I don't value. And a lot of our conflict around our kids is, you know, whose values are going to impose, or we're going to impose on a given moment. Right. And then my kids, now that they're older, have their own values that they disagree with mine. And it's like, well, welcome to Thanksgiving, you know, like, yeah. And so I think what I start with couples is asking questions, but really what I'm trying to understand is how are you trying to solve your story through your child? And how can we stop that process? Right. Cause that's the same thing. We have conflict in marriage a lot is how am I trying to fix my historical wounds, my historical heartaches, my, you know, through this relationship. And once I let my spouse off the hook for that, you know, like my marriage really has all these new directions it can go. I can continue to grow as a person. Like it certainly opens up the door to something really different. than what I might have expected. You know, this week, for instance, one of our teenagers is being a teenager, which is great for him. Like he's doing the things he's supposed to do as a teenager, right? It causes feelings in his parents, you know? Yeah. And I was talking to this therapist this week who works
That's
with me.
That's happening in my house this week too, by the way.
Yeah, which is great, which is, I'm glad they're doing their teenage thing. I say from the security of my office away from home.
Yeah.
but I was talking to a colleague who works with adolescents and I was asking her some advice. I was like, hey, like, can I run something by you? Like, you know, and I was kind of laying out some things and she said, well, it sounds like you've given your kid a lot of power, you know, and this person has young children. Right. So I was like, I said, fuck yeah, I've given him a lot of power. Like, I love him. Like, he's got all this power to mess up my marriage. Because what's going to happen is he's going to do this thing. Heather's going to have feelings. And now my marriage is on the rocks for a few days because I'm going to, like, my kryptonite in my marriage is Heather being in a bad mood, right? Because growing up, my mom's mood ruled the world. And whether or not I was going to get what I needed as a person from my family was really set on the barometer of my mother's mood, you know? And I could read the back of my mother's shoulders at the sink in the morning to know if I could ask for lunch or if I was going to buy lunch at school that day. I just by her posture and her tone and, you know, and so like deeply imprinted in my psyche, in my limbic brain, you know, like down deep in my heart is like, is Heather going to take to the bed, which she never has, but is she going to, it's a Southern phrase, like take to the bed for a few weeks and I'm going to be alone, you know? So like, it's so hard for me for her to have a bad day because it takes me back to this childhood place. Right.
Yeah.
You know, now 20, almost 26 years in, we can have a conversation about that. We used to like not even know that was happening. Then we would fight about it. And then we would like, I can now call
Zach
her and tell her
vigorously for the,
yeah, exactly. Like now I can say, it's like, hey, like last night I was out with a buddy and I called her on the way home and I said, hey, I'm really sorry. Like you're having a hard day and I just am not capable of being there for you. Like, it's just like, it's just my kryptonite and I want to be there for you better. And I sent her a little text even after that saying like, hey, we're going to get through this. And then she said, which is a total Stephen quote, she goes, we may or we may not. I hope that encourages you. It's like we totally switched roles. And it's like she was being the realist and I was being the optimistic one. And
yeah.
But it was like, I mean, we can have this wonderful conversation now, right? Like,
yeah.
And that feels so so hopeful and possible to me. Like, that she can be upset and I can be okay.
Yeah.
You know, and
I think, yeah, practically we're out of time. So I wanted to, I'm glad we ended kind of right where you're at, which is, I think, I thought we were going to get on and talk about your newer book, which is called Hope in the Age of Addiction. I don't want to open that can of worms right now, but for those of you who've enjoyed this conversation, you should check it out, particularly if addiction is present in your world and in your life, because I think the thing that you just ended with is the thing that I hope we've been talking about, which is hope, right? That, yeah. that you're not stuck, and that it's a journey and it's complicated. You have sort of embedded themes that I know are sacred to me and you both. This idea of curiosity is really valuable. And that sometimes, you know, the journey is, what is it? The journey with you is worth the fall or whatever, but it's like, I think people get so caught up in their momentary pain, and I need to do this better, that we have to remember that it's part of a larger story. It's part of a much, much, much larger story that is being told in and through us. And, you know, for me, the hope of parenting, and I think of my marriage, is being in an adult relationship with my kids and having that be something that is fruitful and enjoyable and, that it's not based on
or even meaningful.
Them or me, but like, you know,
yeah. Yeah. So. God, I feel like I didn't even like, I'm sorry, our time's up. I don't think I said anything helpful. Maybe someone will like put a comment on the thing and say, no, that really was helpful.
Well, it's helpful to me. I mean, I think, I need to have conversations like this more often in my life. And I think people probably do as well. Just where you can kind of let kind of the truth roll out. And when I say the truth, I mean kind of the truest thing about the truest thing, it's the truth that your marriage is hard and that your partner is annoying and that your kids are assholes. But the truest thing is that we're all in this together, right? Like, what did you say about Elijah's name? Like,
the Lord is God. Like, it's not,
but then right after that, you said,
we're not the center of the universe.
It's not up to you, or something like that.
Yeah.
So part of what we have to do is take care of our stuff and make sure that we show up as effectively and as with as much integrity as possible in order to make some of these things easier.
I know you're wrapping up, but I think that is like the greatest courage a human can offer is like, how do I show up in a world that is wrought with heartache and disappointment, trauma, despair, right? Knowing that like that could happen, but what also could happen is like beauty and play and freedom and possibility and hope. Like you can't have hope without the real possibility of despair. Like hope only exists because despair exists. Right.
And, yeah.
And man, that's parenting. That's marriage. Right. So, right on.
Well, thank you, Stephen. Is there, how should people learn more about you if they want to?
I mean, there's books on Amazon. Probably my most popular book is Wild Things, Art of Nurturing Boys, which is a great book. And there's other books along those lines. If you're a leader and you want to be part of a meaningful community of other leaders, you can look up theleadershiplab.co. I think those are, there's a podcast called the Living Fully podcast with Sage Hill that I do periodically, which is me just having good conversations with smart people. So you can check that out. You were on recently. We had a Zach Brittle sighting recently on the podcast.
That was fun.
Yeah. So those are some ways.
All right, dude. Well, thanks for coming on. And we'll make sure that people know how to find you. And as always, it's a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks, man.
I'm supposed to say it's time to land this plane. So we're landing this plane. Okay, so that's my friend Stephen, and I'm really glad you got to hang out with him. You should definitely check him out at Sage Hill and at the Leadership Lab. If you want to learn more about his thoughts around addiction, you should check out his book. He also has got plenty of books on parenting, but mostly he's just a guy you ought to be aware of. For now, I would say Happy Mary. I hope you have a happy Christmas, Merry New Year, all the other things that we celebrate in this time. Hope that you keep your chin up, that you do find hope. And I will take an opportunity to thank you for all the time and attention you're putting into your relationship, making it better today than it was yesterday.